Welcome to the Region Queens Municipality Regular Council Meeting Tuesday, March 14th, 2023. I'd like to call this meeting to order. There are two additions to the agenda. Under discussion 8.4, Fire Department Insurance Decision. And Deputy Mayor Fancy will be leading that discussion. And under 9.1, Lease of Municipal Property. Are there any other additions to the agenda? Councilor Muse?
I'd like to add to 8.5 discussions, District 13 Area Rate.
District 13 Area Rate. Any further additions? If not, I'll ask for approval of the agenda. Moved by Councilor Brown, seconded by Councilor Gidney. All those in favor? Thank you. We're pleased to have with us today the Queens Care Building Society, who are going to make a presentation respecting their project. So therefore, I would like to call to the table those leading the presentation. All right, gentlemen, if you would like to introduce yourself, Mayor Mr. Clark, Chair of the Board.
Thank you, and good morning, and thank you for offering us. We appreciate it. We have, in addition to myself and the board, we have Ann Esponant, Alex Dobbert, Robin Anthony, Bill Stewart, Mike Woodrow, and the Executive Director, Pittman. See on the agenda that the Queens Care Building Society, we set up the Queens Care Building Society when we started this project because we were concerned about the assets of Queens Manor that might be jeopardized by anything under new construction and so on. So we follow the practice from the private sector, which is to set up a separate society, so that we basically had no assets and existed only to build the new manor. We found since working closely with government that there is a huge tax problem by having done that. Tax problem is came to the HST that we would not be able to reclaim 50% of the HST, which is normally get the matter. So as a result of that, we have collapsed the Queens Care Building Society back into the Manor Board. We've done that with the guidance and acquiescence of government. So we are back now to being Queens Care for Special Care, which is the Manor. And insofar as our relationship with the Region of Queens is concerned, that the cooperation agreement was already with the Queens Care for Queens Home for Special Care, also that's very important. So we haven't been here for a while under the cooperation agreement. I know we agreed that we would come and report to you regularly. We have been struggling a little bit to complete step 5 of the long-term care facility development approval process. It's an 11-step process. I think we told you that before. Step 5 is a huge step, and it was filed with government in the latter part of February. It I'd say it's a huge step. It was 450 pages. So the government has 3 weeks in which to respond to that. So I'm sure that we will not be getting an answer within 3 weeks on the 450 pages. But we will be following the format of step five as we talk, as we send the project to you. But it is subject to approval by government. So I throw the caveat in that as we go through step five with government, there could be some changes here and there. But the three main points of step five is the design of the facility, and we were talking about in some detail. The approval of step five will allow us to complete our option to buy the land from the region of Queens, and there's work done on the budget, which is only at an early stage. So the government has asked that we not talk about budget at the present time, and because that is still being worked through. But without going any further on that one, I think it's fair to say that it will be the biggest project, the biggest construction project that we need to see. So that's all from me now. I'm going to turn the visit over to Adam Clark from Kate Engineering. Adam is the lead the project manager of us, and I'll ask him to interview the other players on the other consultants we have with us.
Could I ask you to project your voice as loud as you can? I noticed people in the back that...
So I'm Mark and Kate Engineering. The project managers we did ask for several of the design and construction teams.
Everyone, I hope everyone can hear me okay in the room today. Maybe I'll give Steve just a second there to adjust the audio so that you can hear about all the good work. So if it sounds okay, maybe I'll carry on and take the group, through the update. So thanks for having, thanks for inviting me to join again today, and for having us here. Generally, it's nice to see representation across the team. Nice to see Megan and Alex from Marco and more of the FBM team in the room. That's great. I wish I was in Nova Scotia and there with you guys, but I'm here in Ontario. But happy to join and lead the talk this morning through the design update. Just in case there's somebody, if there's members of the team that are in the room today that haven't been able to see one of our earlier presentations, I thought I would give a little bit of an introduction a little bit more detail about some aspects of the team and the process that we've been working through with the team from the region of Queens over the past 8 months. And I thought I'd start with us. And when I say us, I mean the sort of collaborative architectural team of Fowler Bald Mitchell and Montgomery Sisom Architects. You know, this is the team you have selected for this project is a strong team in many ways. The partnership, I think, brings together, an architecture firm that is based in Nova Scotia and has been for over 100 years, which is extraordinary in and of itself. But that kind of legacy really talks about a quality of work and a practice that's quite exceptional. So that's the team that's represented today by Adam and Alejandro in the room. And Fowler Bald Mitchell has been delivering high quality architectural projects for many, many years, decades. FBM has a healthcare specialty, and of course Adam is one of the senior architects with FBM that is leading the work and has specialty in this sector. And it's worth noting that FBM is doing a lot of collaborative work with Montgomery Sisom, so this is not a partnership that is just limited to this project, but our collaboration is something that stretches across several projects, and we're quite proud of that partnership. We work very well together. My firm, Montgomery Sisom Architects, we're based out of Toronto. We're about 115 people, and we've been really pushing innovative models in residential care for more than four decades, so over 40 years. We're really experts in long-term care, so we represent an expertise in the sector that is wider than any other architectural practice in Canada. So we've delivered more than 80 long-term care homes across the country, and proud to deliver all of that expertise and that knowledge built up from our founding partners right through to today to the project for the region of Queens. We've also done a lot of work in Nova Scotia even before our partnership with FBM. We delivered many long-term care facilities about 10 years ago in the province's sort of prior push to the current string of new building work that's taking place there. Adam Clark and Chris introduced a little bit about the sort of composition of the team that's been working on the project. I listed here just the kind of six, I think the six closest, tightest sort of collaborators on a week-over-week basis that come together and are sort of making this project a reality. I think it's really important to know that two of the key players in that working relationship are the two facilities, Hillsview Acres and Queens Manor. I'll speak more about it as we go through the presentation, but the contributions of those two organizations to the process has been stronger than anything I've ever experienced and seen before. Their commitment to making sure that this process is second to nothing is quite extraordinary. Members of those two homes come together several times a week to push the design and test what we're doing and give us real-time feedback and input in an extremely meaningful way. And I think that contribution, that generosity, I think really allows the four groups below Hillsview Acres and Queens Manor in this chart to be very productive and to design something, I think, that is really leading edge. So the four parties down below are, of course, the two architectural leads, FBM and Montgomery Sisom, but also extremely important is Tate Engineering and Marco Group. And Tate Engineering and Marco Group, as Adam Clark mentioned, are really the project management and the construction management partners that make this collaboration really whole. So we have really strong facility input. We have very strong architects with a lot of experience and expertise, specific expertise in this type of building. And we have a builder and a project manager that are all working looking at the project from slightly different angles, but together are delivering something that's incredibly wholesome. And I think the province has been quite pleased with submissions that have come in to date. I think very few organizations that are going through this process are coming at it with such diversity of information from all these sectors. Most teams, many teams may not have a builder on their team, and we're benefiting from that specific expertise. So this is an amazing compilation of contributors that is going to lead to quite extraordinary outcomes in the project. I put a little calendar, I hope you can see it. The details of what's in the calendar are not important, other than to acknowledge that each of these colorful squares represents an interaction that we've had with your frontline team and your regional facilities. And it's really showing us that in any given week, we're meeting across different team groupings and different individuals. But in total, what's really important to understand is that there's been more than 60 design-focused interactions over the past 7 or 8 months that have really led to the design that we're going to show you today and the design that the province is seeing. But 60 design interactions collaboratively means that the project is being built based on the fundamental principles that are defined by your leaders. And I think that's really important, because it'll lead to a building that is your building, custom made for the region. And I think that's very important and quite exciting. as part of the design process, we've been doing some traveling. So I've been lucky to come to the region and spend time at Hillsview and spend time at Queen's Manor. But we've also taken teams and we've traveled around Nova Scotia to try and understand and see firsthand what are the best attributes of long-term care buildings that are being delivered and have been delivered in the last 10 years in the province. So we're bringing out-of-province expertise and project examples from lots of work that's been done in other regions. But we did take the time to actually, you know, get in cars and drive around Nova Scotia and look at some of the facilities that were aspirational to the design. And I put a few of them here. We, you know, we started by touring all the way up in Bedeck. We saw a facility called Alderwood. It was one of the projects that our firm was involved with about 10 years ago, and there was a lot of lessons learned from visiting this facility, and it prompted us to do more touring, because there were a lot of really good results by walking these facilities, talking to people who have operated these facilities for 10 years, and bringing your staff into these facilities and letting them have conversations with their frontline partners in these existing facilities. So we toured a second facility the last time I was down. It was the Meadows in Yarmouth. That was also a facility that we delivered about 10 years ago in Nova Scotia. And then we ended our tours with Ivany Place, which was a facility that members of the team knew and we had been talking about through the design process, but we hadn't visited in person. So we took a tour to Ivany Place. It's not our building, but it had lessons, lots of lessons, good and bad. All of the facilities had bad lessons and all of the facilities had good lessons. And we tried to understand and avoid in our design the things that we didn't like about all of those facilities. And we tried to embrace all of the things that we thought were aspirational in those buildings. So I put together a series of, so I guess the result of our 7 or 8 months of working together and the results of looking at these facilities and doing a lot of talking and a lot of listening have led us to some defining principles around our building. And I'm going to describe the building from the inside out. So we'll start with the features of the building that we think are most desirable, most aspirational, and then we'll zoom out and take a look at the building floor plans that we've been working on, and then we'll take a look at the site if it makes sense to think about the design in that way. So some of the aspirational things that we've been talking a lot about is residential scale. So we really have been your team is very interested, the province is very interested, and we're very supportive of designs that try to promote residential scale in design. And really that means that every aspect of the building wants to be thought about as sort of living at a small scale, living at a residential or normal scale, somewhere in the range of 12 to 16, thought about in the range of 12 to 16 residents. So that means that food and kitchens and the dining experience wants to feel residential, living in a residence room wants to feel residential in character, and bathing and socializing and outdoor space all wants to be wants to feel normal. It wants to feel non-institutional, and exactly as residents have lived the majority of their life in a non-institutional setting. So we've taken great care in every design decision to try to replicate this residential quality, this residential scale and character. And these photographs are photographs taken from various projects from within our portfolio, where we feel there's been success in replicating that residential character and feel, and we want your home. We're showing these today because we think it's aspirational that your home feel like something like this in quality and character and philosophy. So that's kind of one design principle that the team has been really focused on. Another one is recreation. You know, the teams have told us that one of their goals is around adding life to years, that recreation is a way to animate and activate the day-to-day life of residents. And we understand from our time spent with residents and within the facilities that both facilities exhibit characteristics of true recreation excellence. What we understand is that the programs that your leaders and your staff deliver are above average. They're exceptional. And we feel that one of our tasks in the project is to deliver a building and a series of spaces and relationships that will promote the continuation of that legacy of excellence and recreation. I love these photos because these are real photos of your residents, you know, doing what they do best. And it's amazing to see the spirit. We want the spirit of the new place to capture and captivate residents and the community and families in the same way that your existing buildings do now. And I know that if the team gives you a great building, that your staff will do the heavy lifting, because your staff are the ones that make all of this activation and all of this energy and excitement happen. It's the programs that are delivered within the spaces we can help you build. So it takes the building, but it also takes amazing staff. And I know that you have amazing staff. Part of that recreation relates to outdoor space. Part of that recreation relates to indoor space. So in addition to amazing outdoor spaces to deliver recreation, we're going to give you amazing interior spaces to deliver recreation, exciting, animated, progressive spaces that support the programs you want to deliver at the front line. Again, these are inspirational images of other facilities and other spaces that we want your spaces to look and feel like. So we've been looking at these as sort of inspiration boards to what your new building should be. Outdoor space in general is something that we've talked a lot about with the group, and we'll show you in the building design and the site plan how outdoor space is being delivered in a way that's quite unbelievable. It's the quantity and the quality of outdoor space that matters, and its ability to be readily accessible to residents. Again, these are photographs on the left. This is a photograph of Alderwood, one of the buildings that we toured in Bedeque, and it has amazing outdoor space captured by the building in a way that we are replicating in your building. So this is an open-ended courtyard design. The courtyard is a protected element, protected by the building, and sort of supporting and nurturing resident life in outdoor space, steps from each of the households and where each resident lives. The buildings on the right are a couple of buildings in Ontario, but what's important are the amenities that are shown here. You know, outdoor spaces have to have places to sit, places to take a walk, spaces to find shade, spaces to find sunlight, and your outdoor spaces will deliver all of that in the new building. And lastly, as a kind of concept for the new building, we really want the new building to be community focused. So we see this not as a facility that's sort of isolated from the community and separated from the street, but something that actually invites community inside your building. And again, that's continuing the legacy of community integration that your facilities are already doing. But we think, given the new site and our ability to shape the building, that we can even promote the idea that this building is open to the community in a way that has not been seen before. So we're really promoting the idea that this is a space where we welcome the community in, we welcome children in and families in, and we support community-based activities in and around the building in an extraordinary way. So these are, again, some inspirational images on how one might do that. I just want to highlight, your building is aspiring to meet many, many extraordinary qualities, and I wanted to list them in today's presentation because I think it's very important. So as a baseline, the building will support living for 112 residents. That's the goal of the project that's been set out at the highest level. We've determined through design and interaction and visiting other facilities and talking a lot about it, that this building will be a two-story building. We thought at first it might be a one-story building, but we landed on the idea that this is a two-story building. It will be built from households of 12 and 16 residents, so some households will be formed around the idea of life at a scale of 16, and some will be a slightly smaller format where the social heart and 12 residents live together day to day in small groupings. Both of those formats are supported by the province as methods, and both are innovative in the overall spectrum of long-term care. 12 and 16 are good numbers. Those are progressive numbers. In Ontario, the standard is 32 residents. So residents live together in big groups, and it feels very different, feels much more institutional. Living at a scale of 12 naturally feels more residential in character. So this is a very important attribute. Our design, and you'll see it in the floor plans, is based around the idea of an open courtyard design. That's basically a building creating partial enclosure for outdoor space. So it's the building wrapping around a courtyard. The building is taking a very aspirational and innovative approach to recreation, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the floor plans. But it's trying to do unconventional things in delivering the recreation program to make recreation more accessible to every resident in a way that's really fair and equitable. Daylight and views and human characteristics in general, we're really promoting the idea that this is a building that's going to be full of daylight and full of views to the outdoors. We believe that buildings are fundamentally for people. And so all the attributes of the building, those basic amenities that are important to everyone's day-to-day life, understanding what time of day it is and whether it's raining or snowing or sunny outside, are basic principles that every resident and every staff member ought to have a sense of every minute of the day. So in our building, we will promote the idea of views to the outdoors and to access to basic amenities for humans. That includes high quality space for every staff member. So no staff member in this building will work in a space that doesn't have access to natural light and daylight. And that's very different. Not all buildings are like that, especially big institutional buildings. Often rooms get internalized, working areas get internalized, and we lose sight of the human side of a building. That won't happen in your building. Equity is a really important word. The design really promotes the idea of equity for every single resident. So a resident wanting to participate in recreation has, you know, ought to travel the same number of steps regardless of where you live in the building. And I think there's been a real attempt in this building to make sure that there's no part of this building that's disadvantaged or disadvantages any resident within the building. The building has open, clean sight lines, so it has intuitive wayfinding, which means for residents and for staff and for families visiting, it's very easy to navigate. The building is, since day one, has really focused on staff as a priority, and this building will have a particular focus on staff wellness, and it will have specific dedicated space, indoor and outdoor space, dedicated to staff within the facility. On the sustainability front, this building is progressive in its thinking about carbon, and it has a pathway to net zero, and we'll show that in the site plan. Part of that is about on-site renewables, but the project is taking a very aggressive stance in the world of sustainability with carbon and with zero net zero thinking, which is quite aspirational. And we're hopeful that the building will be able to deliver an expanded set of services related to seniors' supportive services. We're navigating this with the province currently. We don't have, we don't yet know whether it's going to be supported or whether it makes sense, but we're investigating it. The idea that this building may be not just a long-term care home, but may contain other supportive services for community-based seniors, and they may be housed out of a single facility. So we've done some studies to that end. General status of the project, as Chris mentioned, we have submitted step 3, 4, and 5 to the province, and we've received very strong feedback on step 3 and 4, and step 5 we're awaiting reviews on. It's under several weeks of review by the province, and then we're likely to hear back on how they feel about the work. We've not let that stop our progress. We're continuing into step 6, which we call design development, and it's a very significant phase. It's really where the detail starts to, the building starts to express itself, and all of the details start to get worked out. So it's really a big step, and we're currently working our way through that next milestone with the intent to submit probably sometime next month. We've met with the region and various staff members from the region, and we feel that the project and its concepts have general support from planning, and we have a meeting this week to meet with local fire fire department to talk about the work and the approach to the building code and fire safety in general. And so we're navigating, concurrent with pushing the design, we're navigating these conversations with others who will contribute to the delivery of the building at a local level and approvals. A little bit about the building. So this is the ground floor. Again, we said this building is 2 stories, so there's level 1 and level 2. And I'll highlight just a little bit about the basic DNA of this building. We said that resident life was lived at a scale of 12 or 16. We can see resident rooms in groups of 12, sort of at the east side of the building in these groupings that I've just highlighted. So this is 12 residents and 12 residents. And on the west side of the building, these are groups of 16 residents and 16 residents on the west side of the building layout. In long-term care planning, we talk a lot about social heart. That's the social spaces that form the center of each household. Predominantly, it's the dining room, the living room, access to outdoor space, and all of those social functions which make up our social day-to-day life. And you can see that these households, each of these households, have strong groupings of social heart amenities in the center of the household that have access, reasonably equitable access, to all residents within the household. So this is a strong design where within 10 or 15 or 20 steps, every resident within a household can participate in the social activities that are very important part of day-to-day living. So residents essentially live at the east and the west ends of this building. There's something we call a center block, which is this block that lives sort of between the two household pairs on either side of the building. Most of the public space programs, the front door, community connections, adult aid program, some of the administrative offices live in the center block of the building. And there's a service block, which is the sort of fourth component to the building plan, which is this block of service and support amenities that lives sort of to the north side of the building plan. So there's really 4 elements that organize this plan: 2 sets of resident households and a center block that has a front, which is very public facing, and a center block element that is facing the back and is very service oriented. The second floor of the facility is very much like the first floor, except that it has a center block service element that is smaller in its physical footprint than level 1. So you can see on level 2, the service block component is diminished, but the households are very much like the households on level 1. So on level 2, we get a repetition of a second set of resident households, which is largely identical to the resident households on level 1. And then we have a center block facing the front of the building, which contains more social, neighborhood social scale amenities and community and public amenities. So private space is really at the ends of the building with residents in their households, and the social function of the building is in the center and facing facing the street. Just a sense, we talked before about the quantity and quality of outdoor space. This is a graphic just comparing, just so that we understand space and scale. This is existing Queen's Manor building footprint. And these spaces, these green spaces, are the current outdoor space provision that Queen's Manor uses for their recreation-based programs. On the diagram in the top and to scale, you can see the scale and intensity of outdoor space for the new building and how meaningful and significant it is. So, you know, we know that Queen's Manor and Hillsview Acres today deliver amazing recreation programs with the spaces they have. This building is really going to give them a quality and quantity of space to deliver those programs at a different scale and a different level. So it's pretty exciting to see that all of this green space is space that can be actively and productively used by residents and staff on a day-to-day basis to deliver the highest quality programs imaginable. A few views we wanted to share. We're in design development right now, so we're just starting to get a sense of the attributes of what it feels like to be in this building. So we've been doing a lot of planning, a lot of operational studies for this building. Recently, we've been able to begin to take views of the building, both from the interior and the exterior. And these are pretty new. I think the province only seen these just a few weeks ago. So some of this information is still in development and very new, but I think it's important to show that, to show members of the group today, sort of where this project is headed in its next design phases. So we included in the presentation today just a view, one of the views of the interior of the resident household space. So if you were a resident eating breakfast, you would be really eating in an environment that looks like this, which is really to say that it's a concept that's being explored. We call courtyard side dining. It's really a single row of tables for a dining room where you don't have to travel multiple tables deep. Amazing views out into the courtyard, as adjacent to your dining experience. So the ability to see out into these amazing landscaped courtyard spaces. This view is taken from the second level. So you can see on the second level, you actually even have these projecting views out into the outdoor space in the courtyard, which are quite extraordinary. So just a sense of what it might be like to sit in the dining room inside the new home in one of the typical second floor resident dining rooms, just as an experience. We have been starting also to study some massing and views of the exterior of the building. These are still in a high level of development. We're still studying the form and the expression and the materials, but I think it's starting to give, it very quickly gives the group a sense of the kind of residential scale and character, and the idea that these buildings can feel perfectly normal and integrated into your local community. So we want buildings that don't feel overly institutional in scale and character and feel like they're normalized and almost part of the residential fabric of your neighborhoods. So we're really shooting for that kind of aesthetic. It's why we're looking at features like sloped roofs and chimneys and those things which make these buildings feel less institutional and more related to residential type life. This is another view sort of, toward the street from Queen's Place, looking sort of at the facility. And this is looking at the buildings, but also the outdoor space that lives between these buildings and will support recreation and outdoor life for residents. And the idea that the community can use these outdoor spaces to enjoy and move into the building through these amazing outdoor spaces. So just a few views of the design as it's evolving. And I thought I'd end our talk today just by talking about the site and the importance of the site to the ability to deliver such a progressive design. I think you will all be very familiar with the site. I think something that's really important, has been really important to this group as we've navigated the use of the site for the placement of the new buildings, is orientation. So the teams have told us, and we've worked very hard to deliver a building which is clearly south-facing and where all of the resident home areas, households, all of the resident household outdoor spaces have very strong south orientation. So north is up in this plan. south is toward the bottom of this plan. And we've created a building that's very porous. And we often draw this sketch, which is the idea that as the sun moves across the front of this building during the course of the day, daylight will find itself in these outdoor spaces and through the heart of the interiors of this building in a really productive way all day long, you know, every single day. And we think that's really important. And it's part of the reason why this building has this clean south orientation as opposed to a kind of southeast or southwest orientation and laying it out on the site. You can see that we're citing the placement of the building on the south half of the site. That's very important because the south half of the site is flatter than the north side of the site. And the north side of the site is being reserved to deliver part of the approach to net zero. So we think that there's a pathway to use the north part of the site as a means to produce electricity through solar PV. And that slope south-facing orientation is actually the perfect orientation for the delivery of systems like this. So we think this could be a very productive part of getting to a project that is as sustainable as it as can be. Public access to this building has been designed as an extension of Queen's Place Drive. So there's ability to come to the front door off of an extended Queen's Place Drive. And there's a reconciliation of how the orientation of this building and the front door of the building meets the street in a logical manner. And you can see that's the reason for the rotation of the access at the front of the building. So we want the access for this building to hit at 90 degrees to the street to create a really rational front sort of front door experience for the building. And logically, we think that servicing for the building is also likely to come predominantly from the south end of the site, likely through a continuation of services that would be extended on Queen's Place Drive and into the building site. With the exception maybe of hydro, which we think will come from the rear of the site. So this is an amazing site, and we thank, the region for the ability to have such a productive south-facing site, because we think a lot of the characteristics of the building design are enabled through the partnership to deliver this site. It's very important. Some buildings are disadvantaged by their site. This building is enabled to do all of the thing it needs to do to make it the best possible building for residents and staff in the community because of this amazing site. We think that it's we think that there's a way to place and orient this building on the site that's being considered in a way that just allows it to do many things that are quite extraordinary. So with that, I'm going to maybe hand it back over. Happy to take any questions if there's any specific questions around the design attributes, if anyone has it.
Thank you, Tony. Questions, comments? It certainly is well planned. Great care taken in the design principles. And when this is built, I know there will be a crown for Queens. Deputy Mayor Fancy.
As you look at the design, you have 16 on the west side and 12 on the east side. Was that a particular reason for that? I mean, if you've got you're putting in two different residential care, is that designed to accommodate both factions?
Yeah, it's a good, this is a great question. And I think the way we were thinking about it at first was we started thinking about it in the context of 112. So the number of beds that were approved for delivery for this project was 112. And it didn't take us long to figure out that 112 was neither cleanly divisible by 12 or 16. In a manner that would support a limited number of stories. So we did study this building at one story and 112 112 residents, and that led us to a building which was very sprawling across the site. It would have fit on the site, but it wouldn't have left us any site area for other things. And these buildings need a lot of site area for other things. So the first attempt was to lay out 112 residents across a single story. We then, from touring other buildings, came to the conclusion that a two-story building was a way for us to significantly reduce travel distance for residents and travel distance and operational wastefulness in day-to-day operations for staff. Staff who have to take thousands and thousands of steps a day spend a lot of time walking, and all of that time is time taken away from resident care. So we decided to make a two-story building, and we're trying not to make a three-story building. But if we used, for example, if we tried to build the building out of all 12s, it probably would have resulted in kind of a two-and-a-half-story, 12-resident kind of building structure, or something that was atypical operationally. So twinning 16s and 12 was a way to, at first, was a way to help rationalize the 112 residents. And we even contemplated going back to the province and asking for a few more beds to try to rationalize the numbers, because the 112 was a challenging one to deal with. We then started to think about the 12s and the 16s as being potentially like having slight differences between the 12s and the 16s as a way maybe to support better some of the different levels of care in this building, and I think that's what you were mentioning when you talked about LTC versus RCF. So yes, we think some of the modules maybe are stronger as a basis for RCF residents, and some might be stronger for residents, for example, with a higher level cognitive decline, dementia. So sometimes smaller is better for some residents, and slightly bigger is better for residents who prefer greater social interaction, social scale, or for residents that maybe have more independence. So in a sense, we've ended up with a building that has some flexibility. It's not, every single household is not identical, but maybe there's some characteristics that allow it to serve certain groups and certain residents better. We think it's a strong approach. We even studied building the building out of 14s, to try to get to that 112 number. I remember at one point, but 14s were very difficult to operationalize. So it's a balancing of operations, the total number of residents, and what the province will support. But we also started, I think, to take some attributes about the diversity of 16s and 12s as maybe being a strong positive attribute of the building to better serve the diversity of residents that are going to live here.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Fancy. That's a great question. Other questions? We cannot take questions from the Councilor Brown.
I see that we're talking about extending the services on Queen's Place Road. How far do you think that'll go, and will the road need to be extended past to get fire services to the east side of the building? East and west, I should say.
Yeah, so I'm happy to, I had a little bit of difficulty hearing, but I think it was about asking about the extension of Queen's Place Drive and the extension of services to sort of support this arrangement that's been designed. Is that fair, Adam? Am I understanding the question correctly?
Yeah.
And I think the second part of that was, how are we going to address servicing the east side of the building from a fire service perspective? So I'll try and answer each of those maybe separately. I think what we're presenting here in the site plan, we've studied the site plan in a lot of different manners. We've tried out designs that try to service the front of this building from the existing, end of Queen's Place Drive on the kind of the turnaround. And it did not lead to the best design outcomes for what this building deserves, meeting the street. And so we've drawn it in a way that we think supports the strongest arrangement of a front of a building and a front door of a building facing the street and opening itself up to the community and linking to all of those recreation activities across the street in a very productive manner. So we see all of the work that the region has done in all of these outdoor and recreation amenities that exist to the south side of the site. We want to connect with those things. We want families to come and play in the playground and go for walks with residents and connect our building to all of those amenities so that the sum of all of these services and buildings together are stronger than each of them individually. So we're drawing the site plan in a way that shows a modest extension of Queens Place Drive and likely some service-based extensions headed eastward that can turn and service our building in the most productive way, in the best outcome, delivering the most logical outcomes to the front of this building. This arrangement allows, I think, from a road point of view, this drop-off arrangement is very logical and intuitive. If you come here to drive, you're turning off of the street at 90 degrees, you're participating in a front door loop, and then you're exiting and hitting the road at 90 degrees and turning left or right. So we think it's very logical. The studies that we did coming off of the end of the existing Queens Place Drive were confusing and illogical. It's like coming to the end of a street and not quite knowing whether you should be turning or driving straight or just extending. So again, we feel that presented in this way, it's the most logical way to reconcile the building's front and front door against the street and the allowance for the street that's been put in place. It is that front loop is our point of arrival for fire vehicles. So vehicles that are responding to a fire alarm for this building will come to the front door within 15 meters of the front entrance. There'll be an annunciator panel at the front door, and that's where the fire service vehicle generally will stay. So the servicing of this building is really from one side. Remember that this is a modern, fully sprinklered, fully progressive, like the fire separations, the life safety provisions in this building are enhanced and in accordance with current code. So fire trucks don't need to circumnavigate this building. There's a point of response for this building, which will be as I've shown it here. So there is really no need for fire services to head to the far east side of this building, and definitely no need for a loop around this building for fire services. And again, we're meeting this week with the local leaders of the fire department to run through, we'll be doing that with our code consultant, but it's really to run through our thinking on the sort of attributes of fire service for this new building and make sure that there's consolidated confidence around the approach that's been laid out by our code consultant. Adam, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to that, Adam Reed.
No, I think you covered it. Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I think what I have is a courtyard dimension, maybe. I've taken most of the dimensions off to try to make these as clean as possible. But I think this is somewhere in the range of 20 meters. So if we try to correlate, so if this is 20 meters, one might think that extension, could be in the range of 60 to 80 meters, maybe, if we take a dimension kind of from here to there. Yeah, we could get a hard dimension if it's helpful for the group. Yeah.
Questions? Deputy Mayor Fancy, if no one else does.
Hey, just one other question. I noticed that your hydro is coming in at the back, right? From the rear of the site. I take it that's because you're setting up the solar panels so you can be able to put outboard out, right? And so then also, too, you can bring it as input in.
So it's a good, what you're describing is definitely part of the logic, but it starts with the idea that the existing Best Western is fed from the rear. And so our electrical engineer believes that a modest extension of that electrical service, so from a kind of site development cost point of view, that the most logical place to grab power, provided there's enough capacity in that system, might be to grab it from the highway side. That started the thinking around the idea of the transformer, the generator, all of the solar panel kind of provision aligns kind of well with that. And the main incoming electrical room for the building is right here. So there's a kind of very logical and intuitive pathway to your point about that rear entrance, and the idea that the service side of this building is on the back side. So we have space at the back for transformers, generators, incoming electrical service rooms, and of course the back is the part of the site that affords us this this space for this consideration around net zero thinking through solar photovoltaics. And that's a really important part of this. Like, imagine if you didn't have that piece of site, your pursuit of net zero thinking and progressive sustainability thinking is very limited. You'd have to start attaching it to the building and doing a lot of things that are going to have capital legacy costs and not ideal to do. So this is a really important part of this conversation around the site, and we're very lucky to have this. I think this allows this project to think very progressively about sustainability and net zero targets in a way that some sites just can't even think about. But your logic around the electrical service is correct in that it would be a sort of rear-based service, and all of the amenities that want to connect to that electrical service grid are also in the same proximity to that incoming service. That's great.
Any other questions? If not, any other comments that you would like to wrap up with?
I'd like to wrap up, if I may, by again thanking Council for your time and your attention and for your partnership. It's a huge project. We're going to start this summer. The construction of this whole project is going to be a real onus for the community. Fortunately, there's not a lot of places for people to stay. So my betting is that the construction crews will be coming down from Halifax and Bridgewater, but they're going to eat when they're here. They're going to certainly spend money here. It emphasizes the need for more housing in our community. I sit on Queen's Care side here. There's a committee there working on housing. We've got to get it going. However, I don't want to belabor any of that. The other question I get is, what are you going to do with the existing manor? And we haven't decided that. It's a good building. It's just too small for us. We have a committee of the board that is going to look at possible uses. Certainly, we'll keep you up to date on our thinking if we move on that. But it will. We're not going to put the bulldozers to it. We've got a building. It's got some great opportunities tied to that. So we'll keep you abreast of that. Thank you all so much for welcoming us and for working with us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.